The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
Okay, you're welcome back. Just before the 10 o'clock news, we heard from Daniel Lochry there, who called on fellow concerned ladies, Gaelic football players, parents, supporters and coaches, saying we've a lot to do over the coming days. The LGFA Congress on Friday the 4th of March, and she's imploring people, as you heard, to support them in getting the LGFA transgender policy rescinded. She says our games are physical games. Strength, stamina and physique can have a huge impact on our safety. She said the inclusion of transgender women puts our safety at risk. Went on to say then that the nature of our game means it's a highly gender-affected sport, and one of the main reasons we've separate male and female categories, averages in physical strength, power, stamina, speed and physique create a competitive disadvantage for females compared to males generally. We called on you to give your opinions. 086 60 25,000, WhatsApps and texts, so give us a call on 074 91 25,000. Right, stay right where you are. Coming up after the break, Garda Sergeant Eunan Walsh will be joining us for Community Garda Information.
The Community Garda Information Slot is brought to you by Sheridan Security Systems, protecting what you value most. Call today and get your zero-wire alarm system from €299. Sheridan Security, 91 26025.
We get the latest information from Garda Sergeant Eunan Walsh, attached to the Letterkenny Garda Station. Good morning to you, Eunan. Thank you very much for joining us.
Good morning, Greg. How's your week going?
My week is going good. My first day of my week, really.
Oh, so yeah, you were off yesterday.
I was, indeed. Okay, let's get into the appeals here. Road traffic collision on February the 21st, so a week ago today in Stranorlar.
Yes, a week ago today, Greg, a collision occurred involving a pedestrian and a van at Main Street, Stranorlar, not far from the bottom of Thrumbo Avenue, at approximately 7 p.m. last Tuesday the 21st. The pedestrian was taken to Letterkenny University Hospital, where he received treatment for non-life-threatening injuries. And again, we appeal for anybody who may have witnessed the collision to come forward to the Gardaí Letterkenny. The vehicle involved was a green Volkswagen van. So last Tuesday, 7 p.m. And again, anybody who may have had dash cam in the area at the time, to make it available to Gardaí Letterkenny, 074 91 67 100.
An appeal too now for information in relation to a collision in the Raphoe area.
Yes, this is an accident that occurred in the townland of Ballyholy Raphoe on the main Manor Cunningham to Lifford Road 2 days ago, Sunday the 26th, at approximately 11:10 a.m. where a cyclist was knocked off his bicycle by a car at the location, and we believe the car in question may have been a silver Peugeot 308 partial reg 221. So that's a silver Peugeot 308 partial reg 221. The passenger wing mirror of the car was knocked off as a result of the collision, and as a result we believe that the driver knew that the collision had occurred and unfortunately left the scene. The cyclist and the motorist were both travelling in the Lifford direction from the what we call the Manor roundabout at the time of the collision, and again the cyclist had minor injuries and fortunately not life threatening. So we appeal to anybody who travelled on that stretch of road between the Manor roundabout and Lifford last Sunday morning between 11 a.m. and 12:20 a.m. and who has dash cam footage to make it available to Gardaí. And again, if anybody has any information in relation to the accident, who'd contact the Gardaí at Letterkenny, 074 91 6700, or again the confidential line 1-800-666-111.
All right. Now, information being sought as it relates to criminal damage in Kilmacrenan.
Yes, this happened last Sunday, the 26th, between 7:50 p.m. Greg and 10:30 p.m. in the town of Kilmacrenan. A lady had parked a car on the roadside, not far from the health centre there in Kilmacrenan, and she attended an event in the local hall. Unfortunately, when she returned to her car, she discovered that both sides of the car had been keyed, and again, substantial damage caused to the car. So we're appealing for anybody who was in the area, or who may have seen anybody suspicious, any cars or people acting suspiciously in the area, or again, anybody who can assist in the investigation, to contact the Gardaí at Milford, 07491 530.
That's a real sickener. I was actually at that event in question, and the notion of coming out and seeing that damage
it's very nasty.
Indeed, and they must have been on it for a little while anyway, because they did both sides.
Hopefully
someone saw it, because the town was relatively busy.
Relatively busy, and maybe somebody passed and saw somebody acting suspiciously. Maybe, you know, to come forward, please.
Hopefully. Criminal damage now at Dr. McGinley Road.
Yes, this is a similar type incident, Greg. Unfortunately, this occurred between 11:30pm last Wednesday the 22nd and 10:30am on Thursday the 23rd, so sometime on the night of Wednesday the 22nd. Car was parked overnight at the location of Dr. Binley Road, and the following morning the owner returned to discover again, unfortunately, this car had been keyed along the passenger side to the front and to the rear. And again, we're appealing for anybody who may have been in the area at the time and saw anything suspicious to contact the Gardaí at Letterkenny 074 9167 100 or again the confidential line 1-800-666-111.
All right, much more severe damage in the next appeal in Manor Cunningham.
Yes, this is a very nasty crime that occurred last Friday morning, the 24th of February, at approximately 12:17 a.m., so sometime on Thursday night. A car was parked at the rear of a house and in the townland of White Hill, Manor Cunningham, and the car was set alight and completely burned out as a result of the damage. So we have some information, and we are particularly interested in hearing about any sightings of a man in the area around the time who was wearing a navy jacket, beige bottoms, a beanie hat, with a face covering. So it's possible that somebody in the area might have seen this person at the time. And again, anybody who may have dash cam to make it available to Gardaí Letterkenny at 074 9167 100. So that's last Thursday night, Friday morning in the Manor Cunningham area. An interest in a male person wearing a navy jacket, beige bottoms, a beanie hat with a face covering.
Yeah, and I think that beanie hat, beige bottoms combination would stand out. So hopefully someone has good information that can help bring the investigation forward. Right, okay. Community information meeting taking place tonight in Colgan Hall, Carndonagh, just to remind people.
Yeah, this is one of the last few community engagements that are occurring throughout the county. And it's in the Colgan Hall tonight, Tuesday at 7 p.m. where the views of the public will be obtained in relation to how the area should be policed. The policing plan for 2023 will be discussed. And again, the views of the public may be expressed. And again, advice and information will be provided in relation to a number of matters: cybercrime, internet safety, home security and fraud. And I know the presentation on fraud and internet crime is going down very well throughout the county, and everybody is welcome to come along.
All right. National Slowdown Day kicked off this morning at 7 o'clock. One notable detection already on the N15, 113 kilometres per hour in a 100 kilometre zone. Now, the guards are just picking out, in terms of forwarding it on to us, bits and bobs. It doesn't give a full reflection of what's going on. But thankfully, when we see the end results of these days, Union, an awful lot of cars checked and vehicles checked, relatively speaking. You know, well, what I'm trying to get at here, it is a small number of drivers, it seems, that persist with the speeding.
You know, because
it's not like 60% have found off the limit. It's a much smaller figure than that.
No, when the figures are given out in relation to the detections, again, it's relatively small in relation to the number of people that would pass through the speeding detection zones at the time. And somebody asked me yesterday, why are you doing this slowdown day when you're trying to catch people? You're letting them know. That's not really the purpose of it, Greg. Again, the aim of the slowdown day is to remind drivers on our roads of the dangers of speeding, again, to increase compliance with speed limits, and again, to act as a deterrent to driving at excessive and inappropriate speed. And again, the objective is to reduce the number of speed-related collisions, save lives, and reduce injuries on a road. And it's important to remember that you drive at a speed that's appropriate to conditions and your experience. And remind people that a speed limit is not a target. If a speed limit is in 100 kilometres and it's pouring rain and it's dark and wet, then, you know, a slower speed would be appropriate. And again, last year, serious injury and fatal road traffic collisions increased. Unfortunately, 156 people lost their lives on our roads. That's the largest death toll since 2016. And again, in fact, January had the highest number of road fatalities in 10 years, with 20 people killed on our roads. And again, it's been estimated that 30% of all fatal collisions are a result of speeding or inappropriate speed. And again, as part of the National Slowdown Road, we guards in our division will be out on the roads conducting speed checks, and we encourage all drivers to reduce their speed, not just today, Greg, but every day.
Yeah, and it's not just the Go Safe fans that are out there as well. It's the, as you say,
road police
the rank
units,
and files
yes.
out there as well. All right, okay. Right, theft of alcohol. Some advice for retailers here. And presumably it's off the back of, you know, crime.
Yes, I see. There is an organised crime in operation further down the country who are targeting large off-licence stores. So generally, what happens is they target one area and after being successful, they'll move on to other counties and no doubt will plan on coming to Donegal as well. So our crime prevention officer, Sergeant Paul Wallace, has asked me to issue advice to the management owners of large shop stores who sell alcohol. Alcohol is the target for this organised crime group. The common groups of three or four quite often enter the shop as a group and maintain contact with each other while also monitoring staff and CCTV cameras. Very well practiced and have managed to steal large quantities of alcohol at various locations in a very professional manner. So Sergeant Wallace has advised that a review of the security measures at such stores should be conducted. So any large retail premises stores who sell alcohol would advise them to carry out a review of the security measures. And again, Sergeant Wallace is available at Letty Garda Station if anybody required a visit from him to review their current security measures or if they require any security advice.
Yeah, so clearly these, they're well rehearsed in how
yes,
they do
very
that.
Very professional,
so
on the move.
You might need to review what you're doing currently.
Yes.
All right, okay. And as you say, they're very mobile and it could well be a matter of time before they are in our region. Okay, Garda Sergeant Eunan Walsh, as always, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Greg. Have a nice week.
You too. That was the Community Garda information item for this Tuesday, the 28th of February. It'll be available for you to listen to and watch back on our website and social media later and on Garda Síochána's Facebook page too. And it's back live with you after the 10 o'clock news next Tuesday. Our next guest on the programme this Tuesday morning is Margaret. Hiya, Margaret. Thanks for taking the call.
Oh, thank you. Good morning, everyone.
We have been on to GEA Donegal in Donegal to relate your concerns. Concerns I share with you. I know I'm supposed to be impartial to some extent. Well, not really. But anyway, on this one, I am not. I agree with you, I think, if that's all right for me to say, Margaret. What is your concern?
Well, I think that, you know, that there should be a choice of having the option to use cash. I mean, cash is legal tender. And the way it is, you know, about going to a match, you might just make up your mind in the morning that, you know, if you had time to go, you would go. And people just don't have that option now. When if they don't have a ticket, well, they cannot go. And anyway, I feel that the people most impacted by this no cash policy are older people and people like myself who are not up to speed on booking things online and things like that. And, you know, the very people now who are being excluded from what they have enjoyed all their life are the very people who tramped the highways and byways of the county and of the country, selling tickets and fundraising to provide the fantastic facilities that every GAA club has now. And, you know, that's great. And it's great to see our young people benefiting from the likes of this. But as I say, the people who worked hard to provide the money and the funding and the tickets, etc., are being excluded. I mean, I know an older gentleman who, I spoke to him there the other evening. He was very disappointed. He arrived at a big match and he couldn't get in. Just because he didn't have a...
Was he turned away, Margaret?
Pardon? Yeah.
I mean, that's unacceptable, isn't it? Like, I would like an explanation, a proper explanation as to why this is the case. And also, too, Margaret, from people I chat to, you know, say, for instance, people choose not to engage with technology. You know, I mean, there are people, maybe it's of an older generation, that don't want to carry a card around with them or don't want to order things online because they don't want to. And that's their right. And also what they don't want to do is ask someone else in the house to do something for them because, you know, you're given, it feels like you're giving away your independence, that you're asking someone to help you just so you can go and support a football team or watch a game. I mean, that's we shouldn't be putting people in that position, Margaret.
No. I mean, there's no point in just having tickets only. And I see, like, I've just contributed to a fundraiser recently and I paid in cash. So if they can take cash for things like that, I don't see why they just cannot have a cash gate to allow people in. And I've spoken to some young people, and, you know, they're not very happy about the no cash situation either. Now, this is young teenagers and young ones who would frequent matches all the time, and what they say about it is not something I would repeat on radio.
I almost want you to, but don't. And you know, then I hear from others, and I know the GEA is not one big homogenous group and there's different elements within it, but then I heard from others complaining that when they go fundraising at night time in pubs or what have you, that no one has cash, that everyone has card, and they're not taking in as much as they did in the past for the bingo and what have you. But you can't have it both ways.
Well, that may well be, but I think that you should have the choice to be able to use cash if you want to.
Okay, and I mean, at the end of the day too, you know, you could argue sometimes the product isn't fantastic. You don't want to do anything that discourages people from going along and supporting their team.
I know, but it's a case of too, maybe the grassroots not being consulted or not having enough voices. That other lady said there are decisions taken and the people on the ground may not agree with it, but seems to be here. If you make a decision, they'll say, oh, well, people will complain for a week, well, but they'll soon forget about it and things will just carry on. We'll have our way.
But you see, I thought this was something that was introduced during, you know, the pandemic or something, that this was a short-term safety measure, you know, not handling cash because germs could transfer on cash. Do you remember all that stuff? That's what I kind of thought.
Yes.
That's what I kind of thought was the kernel of this. This is where it began. And yet now here we are, that it seems to be becoming the norm. I'm not sure what it's like in other counties. Are we outliers here? Is it the same across the country? I don't know. We were speaking to a gentleman last year, and we managed to get a ticket for him, thankfully. But, you know, he just wanted to roll up and watch a game. He didn't support a particular team. He's from outside the county, but he couldn't because he wasn't booking a ticket online and he just couldn't go along and support his team. You know, he just liked watching football.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay, Margaret, listen, we're on to the GEA to give us an actual explanation, because I think that's what we require at this stage, don't we? We want them to explain and justify the decision.
Yes, well, I don't think it can be justified.
I get you. No, I understand. I agree. But yeah, you know what I'm saying. All right. Okay. Listen, thank you very much for that, Margaret. We appreciate
you're
it.
Welcome.
We'll see what the
thank
listeners
you.
Think. All right. 086 60 25,000. You're out there listening to the show. Do you agree with what Margaret has to say? Do you think cash at the turnstiles should be an option? 086 60 25,000. 086 60 25,000. That's WhatsApps and texts, of course. Or give us a call on 07491 25,000. Inflation is even starting to hit the phone numbers. All right, we'll be joined by our next guest after these. Did you know that today is World Rare Disease Day? And I'm pleased to welcome onto the show Michael McGinty, who joins us now. Michael, thanks very much for your time this Tuesday morning.
Hey, Greg, my pleasure. Hopefully you're hearing me okay. I'm at work, as you can see, so a bit like yourself. Yeah, it's World Rare Disease Day, and the Rare Disease Family Network in Dublin asked if I would be happy to have a chat with you about rare disease. So it's not as rare as it sounds. I think the definition of rare disease is actually if it's less than one in two people have it. So my rare disease is HHT, hereditary hemorrhagic telangiectasia, and it's one in 5,000 people. So there's probably about 1,200 people in the country that have it, probably 42 in Donegal. So the day is just there. It's organized by your orders, which is a non-government organization. And it's made up of about 65 different patient networks. And it's just to create awareness of the fact that there are so many rare diseases. It's 300 million people in the world, so it's a lot of people. A lot of people don't talk about disease. In fact, even in our own group, a lot of people prefer to call it a disorder. But you know, the proper clinical definition is disease. So there's lots of them. So you would be more familiar with spina bifida or hemophilia or cystic fibrosis. And that's mainly because people do talk about it more, or maybe it's more recognizable. So I don't know how much you know about rare disease yourself, because you obviously meet a lot of people. So I'm sure you know quite a few people who have got diseases that are uncommon.
Yeah, but I presume part of an awareness day like this too, though, is people feeling comfortable to speak about it or to have the conversation or, you know, because as you say, there are things that are more common and it might be easier to have a conversation. So can you educate us a little bit about HHT and it's a blood disease, isn't it? A blood condition. How does it affect your life, Michael?
Yeah, it's a vascular disorder. Funny, it was my sister who set up HST Ireland after my nephew died in 2012. It's, you know, the veins bring the blood one direction, the arteries bring the blood another direction. And in between, it's a bit like changing on a motorway. So if you're going from one motorway to the other, you take a roadway that's built for it. And these are capillaries. And we don't have these capillaries in a lot of places. So what happens is the blood speeds up and speeds up, and then it tries to go from one motorway to the other, and it shunts. So it just basically bursts. So I know the listeners won't see this, but I have what I would refer to as like pink freckles, and these pink freckles bleed. So basically I can have a bleed at any given time. Mainly it's the nose, Greg. That's a good symptom, is when you see somebody bleeding from the nose, because it's the mucous membrane is probably the bit of tissue that's easiest to bleed through.
It's most fragile, yeah.
Yeah, so losing blood, a friend of ours has just come back from hospital in Belfast where she was in getting blood. Blood donations are critically important for people like us, because before my dad died at 68, and the last couple of years he was in the care of Letterkenny Hospital, but he would go into daycare every week for maybe two units on a Monday or Tuesday and be back in again on a Thursday or Friday. So that's a lot of blood, and it's critically important for us, especially with what happened during COVID. People weren't able to give blood as much as they would have been able to do. So it's hugely important. In terms of my life, you know what, Greg? Everybody's got something. So, you know, we're all going to end up getting knocked down by a bus, or we're going to have cancer. We're going to have something. So I have what I have. I mean, I'm 62.
I understand. I understand where you're coming from, but it's quite a reality check on life. It's true. You're perfectly correct in saying that. Do people have different grades of HHT, Michael? So might you have someone that might just get the occasional nosebleed that's not a massive inconvenience, maybe not require any transfusion, and then you have more extreme cases? Like, you know, is it does it affect people differently, generally speaking?
Yeah, it absolutely does. And when you're younger, it affects you less. So basically, the older you get, things get worse. So my GI tract has, whatever, thousands of these spots. And any one of them could rupture at any given time. But there's no guarantee. So my granny was in her early 80s before she died. She did die of HST. She bled to death. But in those days, I didn't know what it was. My dad died of it. But at that stage, he died in 2004. But he worked out that he had it in 2000 when a young lady in Cork, she was 9 years of age, Grace Nolan, died. And her father featured in the Late Late Show for a few minutes and talked about this disease that killed one child, and he has five other children and himself, and he lived a very normal life. His kids were having a challenge. So in his case, it was almost the opposite. The kids were having the challenges, and he was able to live with it. But there's no reason why you can't live a long life with it.
Yeah,
it might slow things down a bit for you,
can it complicate things? For example, say for instance you had a condition that you'd be prescribed blood thinners for? I don't know. Do you know what I mean? Is that something that could exacerbate the HHT? Do you know what I mean? So it's not the HHT that might be the problem, but it might be how you might cure a different issue.
Well, that's a really good question.
Have you not considered that before?
Well, I didn't. To be honest, none of us will take blood thinners. It's the last thing that we want because it makes
That's what I'm thinking, yeah.
But I had a stroke in October related to my HHT. And the first thing they did when they got me into hospital was to put me on blood thinners. And I objected to having blood thinners and explained why. And I was very lucky that Dr. Parahar in the hospital, he basically said to me, he came up to the bed beside me and he said, look, if you present in this hospital with profuse bleeding, and you probably will, but if you do, we know what we can do. If you come back here having had a more severe stroke, there's probably not a lot we can do for you. So which way are you going to have it? I'm on blood thinners the rest of my life.
Also, too, with rare diseases, you know, and you mentioned your sister Dara setting up HHT Ireland. You know, we hear about thankfully advances in how we treat a lot of conditions, you know, like cancer and heart disease and other things, and we're making advances in that regard. Does sometimes when you suffer from a rare disease, can you feel a little bit left behind that, you know, your life might be, you know, it's as equal to anybody's, okay, but because there aren't an awful lot of you with this, maybe, you know, there aren't people looking for advances to make your life better, or maybe your children's or their children's lives if it happened to be passed down. Is that part of sort of living with a rare disease, that maybe you feel a little less important, left behind, perhaps?
Yeah, there are rare diseases that are better known. You know, popular is not the right word.
But I understand exactly what you're saying, yeah.
So getting the ability to do this, to talk to you, hopefully one person in Donegal. So we reckon 42 people in Donegal have it. I know 20 of them. So if somebody listening to the show today hears what we're talking about, they have a nosebleed or they have bleeding, and then they can go to their doctor and say, look, there's this thing called HHT, which is a rare disease. And doctors, they learn it all about these diseases, but there's 6,000 of them, so they're not going to remember every one mm-hmm. of them. If one person presents to his GP and ends up getting treated, that one person then, it runs through their whole family. So that one person has it, their kids will have it, their grandchildren will have it. The technology is there with gene intervention, IVF, if you want to do it, if people are happy to do it. And believe me, when you're in an HHT family, you'd be quite happy to do it. But there's no reason why HHT should go from my children's generation to the next generation.
Yeah, exactly.
The technology is there to eradicate it.
If you are walking from where you're standing now into another part of the office, and you happen to sort of graze your hip on the corner of a desk, are you more likely to, and your skin is to break, are you more likely to bleed more profusely, or will it be where a capillary break, you know, is it random or
no,
what?
Exactly. It's where those pink spots are. So if I was to rupture a telangiectasia, then yes, it would bleed. I have to admit, it's never happened other than on my nose. So
yeah.
Again, it's your nose is that very skinny skin, whatever. So when that bleeds, or my lips, they are very hard to stop. But no, bumping into things, Greg, I'm okay. It's I don't even think that bruising is particularly worse because of HHT. Again, unless you hit a telangiectasia, and most of the telangiectasias are in your GI tract. So I have some on my fingers, but they're very, very small and very, very few.
Understood.
So they're not really a problem. But
what about flying?
Flying, they recommend that we don't do long distance flying. But I've got a son in Boston. It's a 5-hour flight, 6-hour flight. I do bleed at some point, but it's not, the pressure is not that huge on that, you know, that transatlantic haul. I haven't been to New Zealand or Australia, and I don't intend to go. And that would put a bit of pressure on.
All right, we've been talking about external bleeding. Can this happen internally?
Oh God, yeah, absolutely, yeah. So
is that more of a danger, more of a risk?
Absolutely. My nephew was 22 and his bleed was, we have points on our lungs, AVM. So these little pink spots,
okay, yeah.
He bled. So he basically drowned. So by the time the ambulance got to him, he had passed away. So an internal bleed is definitely worse, but it depends on where it is. So you can have them on your brain, and a bleed on your brain is going to be bad, but then they don't generally bleed on the brain, but they can do. So I've had my brain scanned. I don't have it. I don't have one there, gratefully. And I don't think they're going to grow. I think at this point in my life, the brain I can forget about. The lungs, different story. They're monitored. I get CT scanned in Letterkenny, and then it's reviewed. So Dr. Morell here is the hematologist. She organizes the scan for me. It's done up in the hospital. And then it's reviewed by an intervention radiologist in Cork City. So it's incredible. The technology, again, we used to have to go to Cork to get these scans. Now we go to Letterkenny. It's done very quickly, and it's reviewed in Cork. So the technology is definitely making things better. And it is something that we can get rid of in the next generation.
So if we go by the average and say there's what, did you say around 40, 45 people with HHT in Donegal, how many of those do you believe at this point would be living their life? Because with all due respect to GPs, they're amazing, but they are general practitioners, and you know, they know quite a bit about a lot, but they're not experts in any, but they could be experts in any particular field, but perhaps not HHT. So could you guesstimate how many people are in this county that are walking around with this attributed to something else, or maybe completely unaware if it's not very externally noticeable? Or do you have a ballpark figure in your head, Michael, as to how many that might be?
Yeah, I think it's about between 32 and 42. That's it. Maximum 42. I mean, on average per county, is it likely that more people in Donegal have HST than any other county? On the one hand, no. So we're an average county. But on the other hand, yes, because our family have it and the family is a Donegal family. And my nephew lived in Dublin, but his mother's from Letterkenny. So I think between 32 and 42, and I reckon that I know 21 or 22 of them, yeah. Because most of them are family.
Now, I'm not sure if you're aware or not, but Minister for Health Stephen Donnelly has marked Rare Disease Day by announcing that his department is to develop a new national rare disease plan. He's pledging support to people living with rare diseases. The minister confirmed that work is due to commence on the new national rare disease plan in line with the commitment in the programme for government. Improving and expanding the care and treatment of patients with rare disease is a priority for government. The work will be spearheaded by the HSC National Clinical Programme for Rare Diseases. So it doesn't really say what they're going to be doing as such, but presumably access to medicines and stuff will form part of that. In 2023, the government's committed $2.7 million to support the implementation of this strategy. So what could that do that's advantageous? Would it be access to certain medicines? Might not be a problem for you, Michael, but you'd be aware of others with rare diseases, and there's this effectively a financial block on them getting life-prolonging or life-saving treatment. Like, what do you think needs to come from a national rare disease plan?
To be honest, Greg, probably what we're doing here today at the moment is creating awareness because, as you said, GPs are wonderful. I don't see my GP very often. If I go into hospital, I end up going straight to hospital, just the way things work out. But they can't be aware of 6,000 rare diseases. They just can't. It doesn't matter how bright they were when they went to college or, you know, how hard they work at it. They cannot be aware. So the message really is that people who have a disease, once they know they have it, need to be aware of what medications they can take and be empowered so that when they do present in hospital or to their GP, that they have the information that they need. They know which medication they can take or can't take. I go to Madrid to have sclerotherapy, so I can't have it done in this country. So there are procedures that should be available in the country that aren't, and sclerotherapy is one of them. So basically, if a lot of points in my nose would be bleeding, I go to Madrid and I can have the points injected. So it's an invasive procedure. It's not very nice, but it works and it stops those points from bleeding. Yeah. So there are things like that. And I guess every patient group is looking to government for their specific little thing. So in our case, sclerotherapy, it's an easy thing to do. It could be done in day patients, but every group will have its own wish list. 2.7 million doesn't sound like a lot, but I think it's just there to kick off the campaign. So it's a start.
Now, you've obviously got a very positive outlook, or pragmatic. I'm not sure which it is. It's somewhere in between, or perhaps both. There are others in your family with it too that live very active, sporty lives as well. Do you know what I mean? So this is something you do live with. And we clearly have made some advances. I hope we've made some advances. And certainly that awful loss of your 22-year-old nephew would have been circulated widely amongst the HHT community, I imagine, if they weren't already aware. And you know what I mean? That lessons have been learned. That's an awful way of putting it. But we can learn from that awful loss. And you say finally in some words about yourself, apart from the bloody inconvenience, life is pretty bloody good. So we don't normally condone foul language, Michael. But in this case, we shall. Someone wants to know, and I don't want to put you on the spot, do you know what the difference is between HHT and von Willebrand's disease? Are they in the same space? Have you ever heard of it?
I don't, but okay. I'm sure that the Rare Ireland Family Support Network would, and Rare Disease Ireland, rarediseaseday.org is a website where you can go and have a look. I'm not a medic, so I don't know very much. That's why the words you were using there were not medical terms as such. But no, I'm afraid I can't answer that question.
Okay, well, we'll let you back to work, Michael. We really appreciate you taking the time out of your day to help us raise awareness of HHT. Because if our conversation just reaches one person that this affects, wouldn't that be fantastic? A single person that might go, wow, okay, that's me. Because whilst we've been talking about it being hereditary, you never know where it might pop up, you know, especially with things. This is where things like adoption and when we talk about it become, you know, it's things like this where people might not know the medical history and what have you in times gone by. It's just, I'm trying to give listeners an example of what we talk about, the importance of knowing your medical history. And this is a fine example of that. Michael, best wishes to you and all the family. And thank you so much, as I say, for your time. Genuinely appreciate it.
Greg, thank you for your time. And hopefully we'll hear from one person. Just
yeah,
one person
that's it,
would make
exactly.
a big difference. So thank you for your time.
I'd love to have contributed to that. Thank you. Take care. That is Michael McGinty there. Suffers, or has, I'm not sure he's a sufferer. He doesn't sound to me like a person that might like that phrase, if you know what I mean. But he has HHT, and we will speak to him on World Rare Disease Day. All right, thanks very much for that, Michael. 086 60 25,000, WhatsApps and texts to that number. I haven't got to any of your calls and comments yet because it's been so busy as we've been moving through, but I have a bit of space now, so I shall get some of your comments here. Hi, I'd ask Greg, did he see the programme on Virgin Media One last night about the homeless in Ireland? I think it was so sad that we can't even look after our own. Indeed, historically we have failed many people in this country. I didn't watch the programme. I don't watch an awful lot of scheduled TV anymore, to be honest with you, but I imagine that we're all very familiar with what was contained within that programme. As I say, we have a long, long history of not looking after our own. A caller says, I don't agree with trans women in women's sport. Just not right, they say. Another, there's no point in having ladies-only teams if people born male and then are transgender women are playing on ladies' teams. If that's what the GEA wants, then let there be mixed teams of men and women across the board. I think when they introduced this, they probably did it just to, you know, to be seen to be doing the right thing. And maybe they need to fully consider all of the ramifications to make sure that they are doing the right thing. What's to stop people sending all through the Green Lane to Northern Ireland and then the receiver packing it into a van down south? Well, there'll be infrequent checks. Checks from time to time. The produce, it'd be probably be quite obvious whether it's for Northern Ireland or for the Republic. And that's smuggling. And smuggling's happening anyway. So widespread abuse of the Green Lane would be discovered really quite quickly. But there'll always be an element of smuggling. So, you know, I mean, is that what we do every day? If you go and buy something in the north and bring it over the border? I don't know. Brussels only cares about control of the masses and little else. The Northern Ireland Protocol was to impose massive bureaucratic control and show that by punishing Britain, other countries will think twice about wanting to leave the very flawed EU. The single market stuff is pure marketing PR to cover up bureaucratic control by the foreigners in Brussels. I think there was a little bit of game playing by the EU in that whole process. Personally, I might agree with that caller there and some elements of that. A caller says the DUP can't have everything that they want. They say they want a deal that everyone can live with, but they want everything their own way. The British PM should put his foot down with the DUP and tell them that if they reject this deal, then Stormont will start up again and continue without them. But there are other measures in place to ensure that doesn't happen too. Good morning, Greg. If Jeffrey doesn't want to join into the government, he should stand down, holding people to ransom while still getting full pay. Shame on him. The problem with an inquiry into COVID, says this caller, was there was only one side of the story ever being told. It ended up not being about healthcare, but about money. Many prominent scientists were ignored, yet now it appears they may have been right. Well, listen, the bottom line is there's two stories to everything, three stories, and the truth is somewhere in the middle. I think the fundamentals of what you're referring to as it relates to what scientists were saying are still, the debate is still on, were masks useful or not? The debate is still ongoing there. Was there any point in certain things happening? But in terms of our reaction, i.e., and this is what I see as the big issue here personally, I'm not saying it's the only issue or the only big issue, but stopping children going to school, was that properly thought through? We had this conversation many times on this programme, of course. Also, you know, effectively, all other healthcare ceasing. You know, why did that happen? I think who made that decision and what was the clinical basis of that decision? These are very, very important questions. You know, €9 meal to get into a pub. I don't know how big a deal that is in terms of the wider scale. Obviously, you know what I mean? At that time, as I say, many callers to this programme were saying it made no sense. It was not logical. Whether or not masks work or not, you know, that's still, as I say, you could have half the people would still agree that they do, half them that wouldn't. But in terms of the big decisions that were made, and I'm not saying they weren't big decisions, but in terms of the impact on the general healthcare system, the impact on children's education, the impact on people's mental health, lessons have to be learned. There's not going to be any heads rolling or heads on a stick. If anyone's waiting for that to happen, it's certainly not going to happen. But I think, you know, a review, inquiry, look back, whatever's required needs to happen. There are some decisions that certainly you would want to know who made them. Right, OK. How can the DUP control the British government, the Irish government, the EU, and hold up Stormont from sitting as well? Does not sound too democratic to me. A male will... Sorry to jump between different issues, but they've come in at different times. A male will always be a male in a body. No amount of drugs can change that fact. GEA is a physical game. This proposal should be challenged. It's not a proposal. It's actually in. They're proposing to actually redact it. Or to take it out, sorry. But I'll read on. This proposal should be challenged by grassroots members and parents concerned. Transgenderism is not a sexual orientation and should be rescinded. Okay, I don't think anyone's referred to it as a sexual orientation, but thank you for that. Good morning, Greg. Men and women are different, yet these people voted yes on how they felt when they vote. Do we change sport for the less than one? These people are... Well, there's some of the accusations that's in that text I simply couldn't read out. The unionists in Northern Ireland jumping up and down about the protocol are those who don't want to share power with people of a different political view. Ireland was partitioned with one community in mind, and the six counties was to remain, in essence, a sectarian state. We all saw what happened next. Remember those who were anti-Good Friday Agreement and now anti-protocol? Doesn't that tell you something, in my opinion? Thank you for your opinion, by the way, of course, on all of you texting in. Keep girls' sports for girls. No one with a penis should be in a girls' changing room, says a listener there. Sorry for the stark language, but that's the point that they wanted to make. Wait till they start digging up the seabed to anchor industrial wind turbines. Fishing boats will be excluded from those areas. Well, listen, we've had people from the fishing industry expressing that view, and indeed I put that question to a representative from wind farms in Ireland not so long ago. Right, lots of people agreeing with Margaret, by the way, and as I said, on this particular issue, I'm going to suspend what I try and be, and that's impartial on everything, and say that particularly if it is particularly older people that want to buy a ticket for a match at the turnstile with cash, my word, let them do that. They have that right. I just want to let you know that Monster Bingo, worth €3,000, there's a €3,000 prize fund, takes place on Wednesday, the 1st of March, which is tomorrow. It's the end of February. It's in the Inishowen Gateway Hotel. Starts at 8:30 p.m. It's in aid of Crumlin Hospital. So if you want to play Monster Bingo, €3,000 prize fund, 1,000 must be won on the 11th page. That is tomorrow night, 8:30 p.m., and you'll be supporting Crumlin Hospital whilst having some fun.